The following day I got up, still tired, not having slept a wink all night. Terrible doubts assailed me. Here, where 3 months was an eternity, so many things could have happened to them. My position in the cat set had made me realize only too well everything that went on inside these bloody walls. I entered the SS office to announce my departure and bid my comrades goodbye. They wished me luck. Although it was still early, the white August sun was already scorching hot when I set out on my 3-kilometer journey. As the crow flies, C Camp was considerably closer, but I had to keep within the fences and was therefore obliged to make numerous detours. Filled with a mixture of dread and curiosity, I set out through the neutral zone, which was bordered by electrified fences. They never fired on you without warning when you passed through the maze of wires. Motorcycle patrols rode by with signs hung round their necks, reading Lager Polizei, Camp Police. I met several of them on my way, but none molested me. Reaching C Camp, I saw an immense iron gate looming before me, whose two wings bore numerous porcelain insulators, reinforced by barbed wire. In front of the gate, the inevitable guardhouse. Some SS soldiers were basking in the sun. They looked me up and down, for I was an unusual guest, but said nothing. They didn't bother about business that concerned only their comrades seated near the guardhouse window. I approached the ladder and gave him my tattoo number. He looked at me expectantly. I took Dr. Mengele's pass from my pocket and handed it to him. After perusing it, he ordered his comrades to open the gates, then asked me how long I wanted to stay inside, for, as always, he had to record it in his register. Until noon, I said evenly. 2 hours was a great deal to ask, but the customary bribe of a package of cigarettes was sufficient to get his assent. I handed him a pack and passed through the gate. The main road of C Camp, bordered by dilapidated, faded green barracks, was animated. A women's detail was carrying a large iron cask filled with hot soup. For here the noon meal was distributed at 10 o'clock. Another group, a highway commando, was busily engaged carrying stones for repairing the camp roads. Several women were stretched out in the sun along both sides of this main thoroughfare. Their bodies were clothed in rags. Their heads were shaven. They were indeed a pitiful sight to behold. Many were dressed in the most fantastic clothing. One was wearing a sleeveless evening gown and were seated on the ground, busy delousing themselves or their companions. The exposed parts of their bodies were covered with foul, oozing sores. It was from this section that convoys were chosen to be sent to camps farther away. As far as I could tell, the selections had been very carefully made, for all those left here appeared to be the very weakest. Lucky were they who had been sent to more distant camps, for they still had a chance of surviving, whereas the fate of those still here was sealed, a fate identical to that of the gypsy camp. I headed towards the first barracks. From all sides, cries and shouts greeted me. Those who had seemingly been mere bundles of rags lying on the ground or crawling on all fours, revived, and leaving their places, ran towards me. About 30 of them had recognized me and crowded around anxiously for news of their husbands and children. If they had been able to recognize me, It was because I had managed to live in such a way that I still looked like a human being. But it was almost impossible for me to recognize them. So greatly had they changed. My situation in the middle of the clamoring crowd was becoming embarrassing. In ever-increasing numbers, they crowded around me. Everyone wanted to learn something about her family. For 3 months, they'd been living under an impossible regime and in constant fear. Here, selection took place once a week. 3 months had been long enough for them to have learned to regret the past and fear the future.